Impossible true stories from beyond the imagination. A podcast from the book Coma and Near-Death Experience, the beautiful, disturbing, and dangerous world of the unconscious.
Hi, I'm Alan Pierce. In this omnibus edition, we're giving voice to some of the coma survivors who've been helping us with the book, Coma and Near-Death Experience. What you're about to hear defies all medical and scientific understanding. First up is Isabel's story, the account from deep inside coma from a medical professional in Cape Town, South Africa. Isabel spent 2 months in a medically induced coma when she contracted COVID-19. Within the depths of deep sedation, she experienced a never-ending cycle of alternate lives, all utterly horrific. But the doctors that were treating her, her actual work colleagues, found themselves baffled by her experience. They're not alone. Most doctors will tell you, if Isabel claims to remember anything, these are just false memories. The coma experience should be an utter blank. But for so many, it's not. Most doctors also believe that they're truly doing the best for the patient, sparing them the trauma of intensive care, and giving them the chance of a deeper, restorative sleep. What they don't know is that they're causing far more harm than good. Be warned, some listeners may find what follows deeply disturbing. This is Isabel's story.
I was 6 months pregnant when I got COVID-19 on Christmas Day, 2019. I went into labor prematurely and the baby got COVID and died. As soon as my baby was born, my stats dropped and I was rushed to intensive care where I was put into a coma and my reality changed. I woke up in an organ harvesting facility. They'd found a way to kill me and regrow my organs over and over again. And that went on for 4 years and I was kept in a coffin. All of my organs were harvested over and over again. And each time that I was murdered, I woke up in a different life. Then I die again, wake up, have another life, die again, and wake up. Each time I was murdered, I was raped. In one life, I woke up in the Arizona desert, and I was being raped by a serial killer in front of my bosses at the hospital, and he murdered me. In another life, they wanted to remove my uterus, and so they did lots of gynecological procedures, about 7. In another life, I was fighting apartheid in Simonstown. I was murdered on a train track because I was trying to protect someone. I had another reality where I spent 100,000 years on the top and bottom levels of existence. On the upper levels, it was all ones and zeros, and on the bottom, it was sediment and different layers of life through the years. I switched between the two. You know, people think that these are just dreams, but I remember them as memories. I can give all kinds of details. These are clear memories. And I mean, they were just countless, these lives. And in every reality, I was paralyzed. In another one, I thought this awful kidnapper had melted the top of a toothbrush and inserted razor blades to cut deep into my teeth. In reality, I guess the nurses were cleaning my teeth, but they didn't realize what I was experiencing. They weren't trained to understand. When they did the tracheotomy, I thought that a nurse was sticking an apple core into my throat and chaining me through my neck to the bed. When my nasal feeding tube was being put in, I thought they were cutting my nose off to disfigure me so I wouldn't try and escape. Apparently, I did die 4 times, and each time I was resuscitated. But for me, death was a beautiful experience. I was in a big green field, and the grass was blowing in the wind. Long, lush grass. There was a horse. And I carried on walking. And there was a big lake with beautiful trees hanging over it. And there were wooden, gnarly, knobbled steps up into the sky. And I knew that at the bottom was life and at the top was death. And I started walking up those stairs. At first, I'd been fighting to live, but I'd suffered so much in that coma that I chose to die. And I walked up those stairs, and I was 4 steps from the top. It was like the night, without stars, pure, expansive, and just calm. And that was the happiest I've ever been in my entire life. And I was 4 steps from the top when I heard my name being called. Isabel, you can't leave. You have to come back. I was so pissed off. I turned around and stomped back down the stairs. Afterwards, when I was recuperating, I went back to our intensive care unit and I tried to tell my colleagues about my experience inside coma. And everyone was just like, oh, that's weird. Oh, really? And when I saw my surgeons and my anesthetist, no one could understand what I was talking about. If someone came now to put me in a coma, I'd be like, get away from me. I would sooner die than let that happen again. Coma, you know, is so dramatic, so barbaric that it's happening at all. I think one day we're going to look back and be horrified.
That was Isabel's story, read to us by Danny Painter. Everybody who enters a medically induced coma and comes back has a different story to tell. For some, the procedure is simply a blank in their lives. But others undergo life-changing events, events so real, so rich in every detail, that they're never the same person again. This is Corey's story. Corey is a hospital chaplain in Birmingham, Alabama. He's also an 8-year veteran of the US Marine Corps. One day, he was fighting fit. The very next, he's flat on his back in the very hospital where he works. He has a mysterious infection determined to kill him. With the doctors running out of options, Corey is placed into a coma and pumped full of antibiotics. From that moment on, Corey should have no memory of anything, but he does. This is Corey's story.
On the ventilator, in a medically induced coma, I was self-aware. I could hear and process everything going on. Conversations were happening around me that I knew the answers to. But I was trapped inside my body. My body would not allow me to respond. I was seeing things that were actually in the room, but I wasn't in a position to see them. I could see the monitor with my blood pressure reading, and I could see it going up and down. It would drop all the way to 50 over 20, and all the way up to 190 over 120. I mean, it was just crazy. But I could see it in my mind, you know? In my mind. And it turns out, that's just how it happened. But as I went deeper, I felt like I was coming out of my body, like I was floating away. And then, as they tried to bring me back off the propofol, I came back into my body. And there I was. Present in the room. But it was now a totally different experience. I was in scenes from my life in the past. I was in a different hospital, the one where I lived in Houston, Texas, for 9 years and pastored a church out there. Yeah, I went back in time. I was back to those moments. I went back probably 20 years or so to a time where I had my Jeep Wrangler and used to love going on rides around the countryside here in Alabama. I wanted to de-stress, you know, just get away. I would drive around and see different parts of the state, and I was back on those rides. It was like I was stepping back into the old photos that decorate my home. I was having actual Kodak moments. It was just so real. Being with my dad in Montana, it felt like I was there. I could smell it all. I had all my senses. Oh yeah, I was talking to people, you know, talking to my dad. It was like I was back there. 100%. Next thing, I felt like I was flying, and it was so real. I remember flying and being able to reach my hand down to pick up the snow from the mountain peaks. And it was, you know, cold to my hands. And then, in gold writing, scripture verses came across in my mind. Like the 23rd Psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd," and it would come up and then fade out and disappear. And then, "I shall not be in want" came up, word for word, and then it would fade out and disappear. But there were verses that I had never studied before, and when I was finally out of my coma, I was able to look up those verses, and they were exactly the verses in the Bible that were across in my mind, but I hadn't ever studied them before. I remember having such peace that if I died in that moment, it would have been okay. It would have been okay. And you know, I heard hymns from my church back when I was a kid. "It is well with my soul." Just hearing the choir sing, I was right there in that moment. The way I see it, God is telling me it's going to be okay. You know, to trust me. But I didn't see an image of God. I didn't see a vision of Jesus or anything like that. I just saw a mountain of light. A massive, powerful, transcendent mountain of light. It was so unexplainably beautiful. I didn't have questions anymore. I just wanted to experience it. And I could hear praise music. Praise music that I've never heard before. I've looked for it, but I can't ever find it. But I can still hear that music in my mind. All this, and a beautiful night sky with millions of stars all around. And to me, the experience proved my faith was real. This is a very real thing, and it put a definitive stamp on everything that I believed from my childhood to now. I don't have a fear of dying. I'm not afraid of it. I don't have the uncertainty of it that I had before. And I learned that God gives us exceedingly more grace as we near the end of life. In those moments of the dying process, we truly are with Him. This just confirms it. You don't have to fear. You don't have to be worried. You don't have to be anxious. It's okay. It's okay.
That was Corey's story, read to us by Jason Morgan. Most doctors would tell you that a medically induced coma would give the sickest of patients a fighting chance, a deep, restful sleep that allow the meds and nature to do their job. And luckily, the patient should remember nothing. The coma experience will be a total blank. And that's what they tell us. And it's not true. This is Deborah's story. When anybody asks her how long did her coma last, she tells them 80 years, because that's how it truly seemed to her, rather than the 2 actual weeks that she was kept deeply sedated. On the outside, Deborah appears to be deeply at rest. The intensive care staff have absolutely no idea of the tortures playing out in her mind. But these are not dreams, they're not even nightmares in the regular sense, because by rights, in a coma, the brain should be switched off. Nothing should be happening inside. But it is.
Have you ever seen that TV show Preacher? They go down into hell, and the punishment is a repeated loop of the worst thing that's ever happened to them in their life. And it's played out over and over again. And that's how it was for me. I don't fear death like I used to, but I fear hell. I think my nightmares were my personal hell. Now I get them as flashbacks. The smells, the sounds, the feelings, the emotions. And then I'm back there. And that's how I experienced my coma. The same dreams looping and looping over and over again. I was told my husband didn't love me anymore. I was told by 2 actors employed by the nurse. She was actually the angel of death in disguise. I had to send Morse code with my pelvic floor to control the lights on the embankment because I was drowning in the Thames. I was assaulted. I was raped. I was cast in fiberglass. I was abandoned. One nightmare followed by another nightmare followed by another nightmare. And it was like going from one horror movie to another horror movie to another horror movie. terrifying, abject terror. I was crying in my coma. These are memories, not dreams, just so vivid, and they stay with me. Which is real? Am I awake or still in my coma? This is my loop, my hell. For the longest loop, I was offered a job by one of the nurses. She said, as I had no family and couldn't move, did I fancy earning my keep by being a real-life mannequin in her pub? They needed victims to lie still. It was a serial killer-themed pub, and they wanted it to be totally realistic and use real people as murder victims. It was called the Old Airport, and we sold all kinds of drinks, beers, martini, whatever. And I was one of the living murder victims because I was in a coma and they could do whatever they wanted to me. Throughout the years, they would spray me with lacquer or a type of fiberglass to keep me preserved. I remember the smell even now. And they kept me alive with tubes and stuff. There was a guy on the door taking money, a tour guide, several actors, and me, a big fat nothing, a slob lying in a bay window with no memory of who I was or where my family were. And they kept making it more and more realistic. They went from having actors and actresses playing those serial killers to then having real-life serial killers, actual people released from prison, to reenact some of their murders on me. I was raped in my glass cocoon, which was just horrific. I had 3 children. Years passed. Decades. I became encased in so much fiberglass that it was like golden rock, like amber. But the pub was due to be demolished and they didn't know what to do with me. I'd been there 80 years. They put me in a wheelchair and I was taken to a medical research facility, some kind of body farm. They put me in a water tank. And I'm in there with my mum and dad, and we're decomposing. I can see the flesh falling off their bodies and mine. I spent the first 2 months after my coma convinced I'd died. And still, I have to check I am actually alive. I tell people I was in my coma for 80 years because that's what happened. I think my nightmares were my personal hell. They were as real as I stand here today.
That was Deborah's story, read to us by Lindsay Cox. Stephen is another Brit. He's a retired medical statistician. We've not heard his story before. He was already unconscious when he arrived at the intensive care unit. His colon had suddenly burst whilst at home, and he was quickly developing sepsis. The doctors take one look at him and put his chances of survival at 1%. Swiftly, he's heavily sedated and placed on a ventilator. It would be 10 days before Stephen would open his eyes again. This is his story.
I wake up to find myself in a large hotel room. The walls and even the ceiling are covered in cushions of different sizes, red and crimson, coloured patterns, all overwhelming, stifling, oppressive. I try to get up, but can't. I wriggle, I squirm, but can't get up. There's something slip-sliding beneath me, refusing any purchase and oh so lumpy. Hundreds of cushions. And facing me on the opposite wall, a huge, square, centre button cushion that exudes a grim malevolent threat to engulf and smother me. But then I hear noises to the right and see an open doorway leading outside. Here are three or four workmen in bright orange vests. With strong metal pliers, they snap the metal strips that somehow keep me trapped in the cushioned room. The work is hard. Some get tired and want to break. But I'm pleading. Please, please don't stop. Help me. It's suffocating in here. Now I find myself outside, in a tiny yard, and approach a long, low pen holding small animals. Goats, pigs, chickens, all are dirty, muddy, filthy, grey, listless animals. I turn away and find myself standing at the plateau of Liverpool Metropolitan Cathedral, looking out from over the steps to Mount Pleasant and Hope Street beyond. But all is grey, desolate. The buildings in ruins, all is wasteland, under crouching, brooding grey clouds. As far as I can see, a vast industrial vista of sprawling railway sidings, shacks and sheds, warehouses, slag heaps, amid polluting smoke, grinding grit and grime for miles around. Utter desolation. I startle at a distant sound, growing louder, coming closer, powerful cars racing across the rubble roads. Gangsters are coming, and there's no escape. I can't see them, but they're coming. All around me, desolation, hopelessness, no escape. To my surprise, a grey manhole cover opens. I fall away into a yawning, pouring whirlpool of creamy dark colours. I surface into a rural car park, a small, empty, isolated place with dusty, cracked concrete and chicken wire fencing. All is quiet, dark, ominous. The only way out, a narrow, single track. A white gravel road with fir tree forest beyond. Suddenly, the roaring sound. And out of the dust clouds, white and gold gangster cars break hard, the wheels lock, and gravel scatters everywhere. Doors fling open, shadow shapes emerge. I'm trapped. I'm suffocating. Waking now. Lying prostrate, looking around into grey-blue daylight. Bright window at my right, the light washing into the room. And a swish, swish, constant swishing, inducing vague feelings of irritated anxiety. Time interminable. And occasionally movement round about. Blurry, slender grey creatures with elongated heads, bobbing, gliding by, ignoring me. Now one hovers near and looms over me before gliding away. I've been here before. I know this place. Why again? Why? Why does nobody help me? Another creature drifts by. When will it end?
That was Stephen's story, read to us by Jason Morgan. In some of our earlier episodes, we heard accounts from deep within coma of journeys to heaven and journeys to hell. This is Debbie's story. For Debbie, her actual coma was her heaven. She'd never felt so happy nor so at peace. She felt a love so pure, so deep, that she says it wasn't earthly. But for Debbie, her hell began when she came out of her coma. Her life has not been the same since. The world she came back to is now cold and uncaring, where nothing seems real. Never sure if she's alive or not, she longs to return to her coma. This is Debbie's story.
It was such a mind-blowing, amazing experience. I was surrounded by the purest of untainted love in my coma. I miss it so much. It was enlightening and awe-inspiring, and not a love found anywhere on this earth. The love was flawless and completely pure, and it filled me. It was all around me. I grieve for it like the loss of a very close, dearly loved one. I feel a part of me never fully came back from my coma. I was filled with the purest of love by beings that were not aliens, but not human. They linked arms around my bed, which was more like a platform for a stage than an actual bed. They were levitating me up with their minds while I was flat on my back. They spoke to me with their minds to reassure me and make me know that I had to fight. They linked arms or hands and they filled me with love. They repaired all my internal life wounds and freed my mind and whole body of depression, of all the hurt and sadness. It was sucked out and pure love pumped in. It was overwhelmingly, beautifully, heavenly. They were my protectors. They chanted and reminded each other with their minds not to break the chain. I was aware they couldn't hold their position forever to protect me from death. They warned me not to catch eye with this gigantic, hulking, grey, dark smoke thing that was to the left. It was inactive or asleep, but moving in its dark corner. It was death. It was ominous, but not evil. I was aware that if I caught its eye and it became aware of me, it would try to take me, and that would be the end of me, for good. No heaven, no hell, just gone. Dead. I wasn't scared, I was just aware. It was just a matter-of-fact thing. It was ominously over there, and that thing was death. Whereas I guess the others were life, love, healers and protectors. But they needed my cooperation, my inner determination to fight and survive. Part of me is still semi-submerged, as if in quicksand. I'm in between worlds. Part of me is still on that bed, intubated. Am I really awake, or is this part of a long-term coma dream? Because everything since then has been strange and glitchy, so just off. Right, but not right. Differences that make me look more closely at people. They aren't who they were before, but a pretty good imitation. I can see people for who they truly are. These are not people or family I had before. Nothing seems real. Things seem staged. People look like actors. Everything has a sinister feel. My hell started after my coma, and it hasn't stopped since. There was something under the floor of the ICU once I was awake that wanted to get me. It was evil and had a vibration that I could feel like an earth tremor. I still feel it now, watching and waiting. Horrendous, very scary. It's the underworld where there's heat and steam and vibration, and everything is bathed in an orangey red amber glow. In ICU, there was a nurse with bloodstains on her uniform who looked like she belonged in an asylum porn film. She wanted to inject me in my stomach while an old demented hag peered around the door, cackling. Two nurses ranted on about devil and redemption. I kept quiet about most of it. I knew they'd keep me in longer if they knew what I could really see and feel. I kept my mouth shut.
That was Debbie's story, read to us by Nikki Woolard. This has been the omnibus edition of the podcast Impossible True Stories from Beyond the Imagination, based on the book Coma, a Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. Available in paperback, as an ebook and audiobook, wherever books are sold. I'm Alan Pierce. Thank you for joining me.